Topic 109, Masters. 1. It is hard for the disciple, struggling with glamour and illusion, to realize that the higher initiations are free from all concern and from any emotional or self-centered reactions to the work which lies ahead or to the form side of manifestation. It is well nigh impossible for the neophyte to vision a time when he will be free from all reactions engendered by life on the dense cosmic physical planes and from all the limitations of life in the three worlds. Today, aspiration provides a constant source of anxious questioning, of painful deliberations, and of high-voltage spiritual ambition with their consequent limitations and moments of sensed failure and lack of achievement. The Master has left all this behind, knowing that even this so-called spiritual responsiveness is a form of self-centered attitude. Eventually, and disciples should take courage and hope from this statement, all this agonizing reaction to the spiritual urge will be left behind. There are many groups and types of Masters, and most of them are quite unknown to occult students, either from their own work or from rumor, or from knowledge of the many evolutionary processes of which the human is only one. Not all the Masters work in the three worlds. Not all the Masters need or possess physical bodies. Not all the Masters, quote, have their faces turned towards the realm of dark light, but many face for eons towards the clear, cold light of spiritual existence, unquote. Not all the Masters make or are required to make the sacrifices which work for the fourth kingdom in nature entails. Forget not that there are many hierarchies, and the human hierarchy is but one. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 5, The Rays and the Initiations, pages 439 through 440. 2. From the esoteric angle, evolution means a steadily increasing sensitivity to light and illumination. A Master may not possess all knowledge possible from the exoteric angle. This he does not need, because after evolution, along the line of knowledge decided for him by his ray type, he is on the way of light, and the light which is in him and in which he lives and moves and functions serves a dual purpose. 1. It can be used to ascertain whatever is needed in the realm of knowledge by the revelation of where the needed information can be found. 2. It can be used also to reveal to the Master that which lies ahead of him and those further reaches of awareness to which he knows he must eventually attain. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 5, The Rays and the Initiations, pages 642 through 643. 3. The Master can build a body through which he can approach his incoming disciples and those who have not taken the higher initiations. He will normally build this body in semblance of the human form, doing so instantaneously and by an act of the will when required. The majority of the Masters who are definitely working with humanity preserve the old body in which they took the fifth initiation. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 5, The Rays and the Initiations, page 705. 4. It is in the new group of world servers that the training of the needed disciples for the ashrams of the Masters takes place at this time in world history. This is a new hierarchical venture. In this group also, accepted disciples learn to work in the same manner as does the hierarchy. The hierarchy works within the field of the world of human living. The new group provides a similar field for the new disciple. It is towards that group also that initiates in the various ashrams converge at times in order to study the caliber and quality of the disciples who are engaged in world salvage. For it is through these disciples that the hierarchy carries out its plans. Initiates do their main work upon mental levels and from behind the scenes, and because of this, their potency is great. This is particularly so with those who have taken the third initiation. A certain percentage of them are, however, active out in the world of daily living. You need ever to remember that at this time, the main technique of the hierarchy is that of conveying inspiration. The masters are not openly lecturing or teaching in the great cities of the world. They work entirely through their disciples and initiates. It will, however, be possible for them to appear increasingly among men and evoke recognition as the influence of Aquarius is more firmly established. The masters, in the meantime, must continue to work, quote, within the silence of the universal ashram, unquote, as it has been called, and from there they inspire their workers, and these latter in their time and way inspire the new group of world servers. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 5, The Rays and the Initiations, page 230. 5. The masters are also subject to limitation. The general idea of all aspirants is that they represent those who have achieved freedom, have been liberated, and are therefore held by no limiting circumstances whatsoever. This is not true, though. Speaking relatively, or so far as humanity is concerned, it is a fact that the limitations by which they were held as human beings are no longer present. But one achieved freedom only opens the door to another and wider freedom ahead, and the ring pass knot of our planetary life itself constitutes a powerful limitation. Speaking symbolically, somewhere in that great dividing wall of our planetary circumference, the master must find an exit and discover a door which will permit him to enter the way of the higher evolution in its more cosmic stages. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 5, The Rays and the Initiations, page 389. 6. A master has no personality at all. His divine nature is all that he has. The form through which he works, if he is working through and living in a physical vehicle, is a created image, the product of a focused will and the creative imagination. It is not the product of desire, as in the case of a human being. This is an important distinction, and one which warrants careful thinking. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 5, The Rays and the Initiations, page 101. 7. Many masters and chohans, after serving upon the planet in various capacities, working with the law of evolution, pass out of our planetary life altogether. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 5, The Rays and the Initiations, page 142. 8. A master can, at any time, find out anything on any possible subject without the slightest difficulty. From Initiation, Human and Solar, page 66. 9. Every expenditure of force on the part of a master or teacher is subjected to wise foresight and discrimination. Just as we do not put university professors to teach beginners, so the masters themselves work not individually with men until they have attained a certain stage of evolution and are ready to profit by their instruction. From Initiation, Human and Solar, page 67. 10. Who our teacher is depends on our grading. Similarity of vibration holds the secret. We are frequently told that when the demand is forceful enough, the teacher will appear. When we build in the right vibrations and attune ourselves to the right key, nothing can prevent our finding the master. From Initiation, Human and Solar, page 68. This is a continuation of topic 109, Masters. 11. Six of the masters, as yet quite unknown to the average occult student by name, have already sought physical incarnation, one in India, another in England, two in North America, and one in Central Europe, while another has made a great sacrifice and taken a Russian body in the desire to act as a peace center in that distracted land. From A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 758. 12. One lesson all aspirants need to learn, and to learn early, and that is, that concentration upon the personality of the teacher, hoping for personal contact with him, and constant visioning of that condition called accepted chelaship serves to postpone that contact and delay the acceptance. From A Treatise on White Magic, page 129. 13. In all great movements you have some thought, or aggregation of thoughts, cast into the minds of the so-called idealists by the Great White Brotherhood. From A Treatise on White Magic, page 131. 14. It should be realized that though good character, high ethics, sound morality, and spiritual aspiration are basic and unalterable requirements, yet more is needed if the right to enter the Master's ashram is to be granted. To be admitted to the privilege of being an outpost of his consciousness requires an unselfishness and a self-surrender for which few are prepared. To be drawn within his aura, so that the disciple's aura forms an integral part of the group aura, presupposes a purity which few can cultivate. To have the ear of the Master and to earn the right of contact with him at will necessitates a sensitivity and a fine discrimination which few would care to purchase at the price. Yet a door stands open wide to all who care to come, and no earnest, sincere soul who meets the requirements ever receives a rebuff. There is no question at this time that those who are in any way advanced in evolution are having that evolution hastened as never before in the history of the world. The crisis is so grave and the need of the world so great that those who can contact the inner side of life, who can even in a small way sense the vibrations of the senior disciples and the elder brothers of the race, and who can bring down the ideals as known on the higher planes, are being very carefully, forcefully, yet strenuously trained. It is necessary that they should be enabled to act accurately as transmitters and interpreters. From A Treatise on White Magic, page 174. 15. The aspirant is told that when the pupil is ready, the master will appear. He then settles comfortably back and waits, or focuses attention upon an attempt to attract the attention of some master, having apparently settled in his mind that he is ready or good enough. He naturally gives himself a spiritual prod at intervals and attends spasmodically to the work of discipline and of purification. But steady and prolonged, undeviating effort on the part of the aspirants is rare indeed. It is indeed true that at the right moment the master will appear, but the right moment is contingent upon certain self-induced conditions. When the process of purification has become a lifelong habit, when the aspirant can at will concentrate his consciousness in the head, when the light in the head shines forth and the centers are active, then the master will take the man in hand. In the meantime, he may have a vision of the master, or he may see a thought form of the master, and may get much real good and inspiration from the contact with the reflected reality, but it is not the master and does not indicate the stage of accepted discipleship. Through the medium of the light of the soul can be known. Therefore, seek the light of your own soul, and know that soul as your director. When soul contact is established, your own soul will, if I may so express it, introduce you to your master. With all due reverence, again may I add, that the master waits not with eagerness to make your acquaintance. In the world of souls, your soul and his soul are allied, and no essential unity. But in the world of human affairs, and in the process of the great work, it should be remembered that when a master takes an aspirant into his group of disciples, that aspirant is for a long time a liability and oft a hindrance. Students overestimate themselves quite often, even when repudiating such an idea. Subjectively, they have a real liking for themselves and are frequently puzzled as to why the great ones give them no sign nor indicate their watching care. They will not, and they need not until such time as the aspirant has fully used the knowledge which he has gained from lesser teachers and from books and printed scriptures of the world. Students must attend to the immediate duty and prepare their mechanisms for service in the world, and should desist from wasting time and looking for a master. They should achieve mastery where now they are defeated, and in the life of service and of struggle, they may then reach the point of such complete self-forgetfulness that the master may find no hindrance in his approach to them. From A Treatise on White Magic, pages 594 through 595. 16. A master of the wisdom is one who has undergone the fifth initiation. That really means that his consciousness has undergone such an expansion that it now includes the fifth or spiritual kingdom. He has worked his way through the four lower kingdoms, the mineral, the vegetable, the animal, and the human, and has, through meditation and service, expanded his center of consciousness till it now includes the plane of the spirit. From Letters on Occult Meditation, page 259. 17. The masters are entirely free from disease because they have entirely overcome the karma of the three worlds and are liberated. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, volume 4, Esoteric Healing, page 382. 18. As regards the hierarchy itself, speaking esoterically and technically, its members, many of them, are being attracted from the middle point of holiness and absorbed into the counsel of the Lord. In other words, they are passing onward into higher work and are becoming custodians of the energy of the divine will and not simply the custodians of the energy of love. They will work henceforth as power units and not just as units of light. Their work becomes dynamic instead of being attractive and magnetic, and is concerned with the life aspect and not just with the soul or consciousness aspect. Their places are being taken under the law of ascension by their senior disciples, the initiates in their ashrams, and under the same great process, the place of these initiates, who are thus being raised to more important work, is being taken by disciples and probationers. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, volume 5, The Rays and the Initiations, pages 15 through 16. 19. The master's influence, as he seeks to aid his disciple, always produces transitory turmoil, transitory from the angle of the soul, but frequently appalling from the angle of the personality. This the aspirant and the inexperienced disciple resent and blame the evoking sources for their discomfort instead of learning the needed lesson of receiving and handling force. From A Treatise on the Seven Rays, volume 5, The Rays and the Initiations, page 32. See also the topics The Fifth Kingdom and The Hierarchy.